I'm working on a paper about urbanization and the resulting increased need in podiatric manpower due to this phenomenon occurring all across the world. And I'm going to begin with, what is urbanization? Urbanization is defined as the growth of the urban environment into the rural environment. This can occur secondary to a rural population migrating into the city, or it can just be the growth of the city. Rural populations are, especially in areas like India or where there's a lot of farmland, due to drought and lack of support from the government, they're feeling forced, and you're seeing more of them move in towards the center of the cities in order to find work. And currently, for the first time in history, the global urban population actually outnumbers the rural population. So in our morning session, we were talking a lot about going into these more rural environments or villages and accessing and helping people out there. But there's also an increased need within these new city centers as well, because of this migration of this population, which makes it a little bit easier for interventions. I'm going to help with help assist in defining urbanization using India as a case study, as it is a great example of this phenomenon. Currently, 120,000 rural acres are lost every year due to this phenomenon. That's 120,000 acres. That's a lot of land. And it's resulted in Mumbai, which used to be called Bombay, now having a hyper-city status. And this is also a new term, which actually means there's a population of over 20 million people in this city. Megacities used to be really common, and there have been a lot of new megacities, but this is a very new coming hyper-city status. Anyways, in 1950, Mumbai had a population of almost 3 million. 2008, more than 20 million. That's a huge amount of growth in only 50 years. And it's important to know that this economic growth of these mega and hyper cities actually has very little to do with the population size. For example, Mumbai contributes 35% of India's GNP, and the Bombay Stock Exchange doubled almost every year in the 1990s, whereas the GDP grew only 6%. So during this time, and also during this time, we had an increase in urban inhabitants, most impoverished, living in slums, of 56 million people. So this growth in wealth does not spread to all the inhabitants of the city. Despite urbanization and subsequent increase in the transient population in India and other countries, the government still tends to implement cuts in spending on anti-poverty programs, health and water, resulting in rural environments where only 1 in 4 homes actually has access to clean water and sanitation. So again, people moving into the center of the city because they want a better life. They need to find a job. They can't make a living in the rural environments that they used to flourish in. And for example, there's been a huge migration there's a city called Karnataka, which is a city called Bangalore, which is that tech city in Karnataka, a southern state in India. And a lot of people migrating into peripheral slums of the city, walking every day into the center of the city to work, to sell what they can, to help out in any way that they can to get paid, and then walking all the way back home to the peripheral slums of the area. The growth of the urban city housing market has rarely supplied more than 20% of the new housing stock necessary. So anybody that's moving into these highly populated areas has to find or make a home of their own. Where do they set up shop? Where do they set up home? Anywhere they can. Sidewalks, chemical dumps, stilts over sewage that floods annually, hillsides, railroad sidings, and given these living conditions, it's not surprising that a third of that population, which they call migrants or transients, are actually ill at any one time. And that foot pathology represents up to 20% of the complaints of that transient population. They have other, there's other conditions existing, it's just that they have to walk so much that what they're most in tune to is, oh, my feet are hurting, or I have these lesions, or I have these sores. This is what they complain about because it's a direct impeding factor on their ambulating and getting to work and making money. So I'll be discussing commonly seen pathology in this population, and I'm going to emphasize the resultant effects often being open sores and lesions, which obviously are a great entry point for pathogenic microorganisms. For example, immersion foot. Immersion foot often occurs during monsoon or heavy rainfall seasons. This could just be due to rainfall or could be due to something as severe as sewage overflow. Immersion foot, these damp conditions can end up causing blisters. Blisters can lead to tinea infections. Tinea infections lead to more blisters, can lead to more infections. It's kind of like a vicious cycle that you'll see a lot with sores and infections and sores and whatnot. But I'd like to emphasize the loss of skin integrity here, because there are other conditions like which I'll talk about a little bit later, like diabetic autonomic neuropathy, that can also result in a loss of skin integrity. And ischemic heart disease can also result in a dryness of skin and subsequently a loss of skin integrity. Next, I'm going to be discussing road traffic injuries, which surprisingly are, or maybe not surprisingly, are the second leading cause of death globally between people between the ages of 5 and 29 in both sexes. And it's only second to HIV/AIDS in both sexes and individuals between 15 and 29, second to HIV and AIDS. So it's a pretty serious event for these people, and something that's quite debilitating. Motor vehicle production has tripled since 1990, and so it's not surprising that traffic is considered the worst health hazard in these megacities or these hypercities. Again, the population that I'm focusing on, this transient population, they're not necessarily in the cars. They're the people weaving in between on the bicycles and the rickshaws and on the in the motorcycles, and are therefore almost more apt to get hurt in an injury or not seen, or we'll talk about that a little bit later too. For example, here you see a family, a man probably driving his three children to work on a bicycle, and it's probably more efficient than driving a car. But bicycle spoke injuries are very common in this population because their foot, a passenger's foot can get caught in the spokes of the bicycle wheel. Most cases involve at least skin laceration, sometimes some sort of tendinopathy. But it's easy to see in the picture how the little girl in the back could have her foot just accidentally stuck between one of the spokes. Motor vehicle accidents result in debilitating lower extremity trauma, second in frequency to head trauma in motor vehicle accidents. So that's a pretty impressive statement, because this is what we do, and it's only second to head trauma in a lot of these accidents. Two-thirds of the lower extremity trauma is actually going to exist in foot and ankle areas, ankle being the most frequently injured area, followed by forefoot, midfoot, and hindfoot. Car tire friction injuries are common when a driver tries to stop suddenly to avoid hitting a pedestrian, usually a child crossing the road or something, resulting in, of course, an injury to the non-weight-bearing surface of the foot. The severity of the injury obviously can vary depending on exactly the mechanism of injury, but it can result in reconstructive procedures due to loss of tendons in the foot. Concerning motorcycle accidents, as you can see in this picture, we have like a whole family on a motorcycle. The same sort of injuries can occur as far as the spokes, and you can see the little girl's foot on the I think that's the gas, right? That little exhaust pipe, which can be hot. You can end up with burns and whatnot. It's also a very common road traffic injury, but they primarily indicate that the cause for these type of injuries related to motorcycles are due to inappropriate footwear, which is something very, very easy to correct, or just, I mean, good shoes that fit properly, and also poor assembly of the type of vehicles that they have there. The standards for selling cars, rickshaws, bicycles, and motorcycles are very different. So the girl here doesn't have shoes on, and neither does the little boy in the front. So burns are very common in this type of vehicle. The worst cases of motor vehicle accidents can result in fractures and even amputations, but it's important to know that within 1 year following the injuries, the injured usually have not returned to their prior level of physical activity for whatever reasons. And regardless of the severity of the foot trauma secondary to traffic accidents, often the injured end up with abnormalities in gait, which can result in pain and lesions, which can become subsequently infected and debilitating without proper intervention. Next, on to nutrition. Poor nutritional intake can result in metabolic-induced bone loss, for example. Unhealthy diets high in starches and cereals are more affordable, but much less nutritious. Diets lacking in vitamin D, for example, can result in rickets in children, osteomalacia in adults, and you end up with brittle and delicate bones that are much more easily fractured and much more easily fractured. And I'd like to emphasize here the role that that altered gait biomechanics plays in abnormal pressure distribution and how that can result in lesions. For example, if you have brittle bones, I mean, you're more likely to fracture. Fractures can lead to that altered pressure distribution, altered pressure distribution secondary to altered biomechanics, and then you end up with pressure in places that you might not have the skin integrity, leading to sores, lesions, infections. Chronic diseases like heart disease, stroke, cancer, and diabetes take the greatest toll upon this population. And for example, heart disease and ischemia, intravascular plaques are formed causing stenosis or occlusion, resulting in ischemia, ischemic wounds. With venous insufficiency, you have damaged valves, eventually leading to leakage of fluid into the interstitial fluid, resulting in hypoxia, eventually leading to ischemic ulcers, ischemic wounds. With diabetics, the important thing that we all know is about the neuropathy, whether it's autonomic, motor, sensory, whether you end up with a minus foot, with atrophy of musculature and contractures, and an altered or increased peak plantar pressures and underneath your met heads. You'll also end up with lesions in those areas. And with diabetes, it's interesting to know that 70% of all leg amputations actually end up happening to people with diabetes, and it's estimated that every 30 seconds, a lower limb is amputated in this population, in the diabetic population. Infections account for 40% of the total mortality in the transient population. Whether it's due to trauma, or whether it's due to a sore that's not healing, or a chronic ulcer, or whether it's due to something like a parasitic infection, for example, tungiasis and hookworm, and mycetoma, fungal infection, all enter through the foot and are also exhibit clinical symptoms on the dorsal aspect of the foot. So it's something that if you look at somebody's feet, you might be able to see, but often feet are the last thing that anybody think about. Feet are often the last thing that anybody thinks about with this population. So poor skin integrity that we see with our diabetics, with maceration, with immersion foot, altered biomechanics, secondary to trauma, or Charcot foot for a diabetic neuropathic patient, motor neuropathy and whatnot can result in foot lesions that can subsequently become infections. So we have something as severe as a localized cellulitis that maybe can be treated with antibiotics, or something as severe as gas gangrene or necrotizing fasciitis, which are surgical emergencies that might require a surgical debridement or even at the worst amputation. And if you do end up with your patient if your patient ends up with an amputation, their mortality can be up to 80% mortality at year 5. So it's unlikely that it's less likely these individuals live beyond after an amputation due to the difficulties associated with it. And at the very least, they end up with disability, which doesn't make it easy to ambulate and do what they need to do to survive in this type of environment. And that's it. That's nice. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Go ahead.
Well, you're saying that 20 million people migrated into Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
Of that 20 million people, how many people actually find work?
Oh, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people end up just panhandling, but you can kind of impose work as well. You can a lot of times in India there's always somebody that's poorer than you, or somebody that's poorer than you there's always somebody that can do something for you, because there's so many people as poor as you are, there's always somebody poor, so they can help with things like dishes or taking care of the kids, and they can find work. Not to mention, a lot of these rapidly growing cities have a lot of industry, so like tech cities like Bangalore, like there's stuff to do. They're not necessarily paid well, but there are things for them to do, whether it's in product lines or what have you, and whether it's legal or not, there's work. But they still have to travel quite a bit to find work, and it's still very competitive. So losing your ability to ambulate or being sick for even a day is a very scary thing for these people. So they often present really delayed too. Like, so they might have a pretty severe lesion on their foot, and they're like, oh, well, you know, I have to go to work or I'll lose my job. Or they don't want to be ostracized, so they hide it and they cover it up because nobody wants to catch it, or they might think it could be something dangerous, and they'll scare other people off, so they're kind of timid about presenting it, although they complain of it very often. So they don't know. And they actually got interested in this. I was in India, I was visiting my grandma's doctor, and she was like, you know, there are no podiatrists here. And I was like, really? Like, I mean, with amputation rates and with, when you walk down the streets of a lot of these urbanized, like right in the middle of a city that is high tech with a lot of business people, you'll see a lot of panhandlers with a lot of foot deformities. And their first line sometimes of treating conditions is an amputation, which doesn't actually end up helping anything. So, I mean, they think about things very differently. We can come into this in more of a preventative manner and really do a lot of good work in these type of communities very easily, even if it's just educating existing health workers to take off shoes and look at sores and look at people's feet, or even educating the population on dangerous things that they should worry about, or wearing proper footwear and the importance of it, and also if they knew that there were resources for them, a place for them to go to, you know, even just get some antibiotics or have the wound dressed or have a laceration sutured up and a little bandage put on it. So it's pretty simple stuff. It just needs to, yeah.
Who treats the podiatric pathologies?
In India right now, I think it's just a regular doctor, because there's nowhere else people go. Like, they just go to their primary. They go to the one doctor in their village, whether they're a doctor or not. In a lot of the more city-like environments, my parents are from the south, and in the village, if you're living in the village, my grandma lives in a village. If you live in a village, then if you're fortunate enough, you can go see like the few internists in the city who'll have like lines out the door, and I don't know how they don't get paid for what they do oftentimes, and you wait like in the morning. One of our morning presenters, Dr. Adams, mentioned you wait a long time, and you're seen when you're seen, and you hope that they can address whatever is on your body, wherever it is. And I mean, a lot of this stuff is also simple, so an internal physician can do it. They just might not know foot pathologies as well, and maybe how to treat them. And then in villages, it's a lot of just folklore sort of treatment. So, I mean, my grandma still uses a lot of it. She's very much into oils and Ayurvedic medicine. And if you have a burn, like, you don't, even a severe burn, it's not treated like, we're like, oh, Sylvadine. I mean, but for them, it's just, oh, here's some, they make something out of an oil out of the backyard, out of some greens in the backyard. And maybe it works. I mean, it must work because they keep doing it. So there must be something to it. Placebo effect? I don't know. Okay. Thank you.